What's up, world? This is Jesse Rich with Jesse Rich Podcast, and good morning to you Friday drivers. If you are on your Friday and you want to party it up this weekend, I hope I make your Friday just a little bit more exciting with this podcast. So today, I searched an article on very short tales of horror. There was 30 of them, and it said something like the full name was 30 terrible, very short tales of horror that won't let you sleep at night or something like that. But since I broke it down into only a couple of the stories that I want to tell you guys that I thought were interesting, I just shortened it to very short tales of horror. Also, these are tales that were found on Reddit, so I will definitely be giving the shout out to where it is due, so always give credit where credit is due. And then I will tell you a very vivid scenario with me that happened and how it was interpreted and what happened after. It was very interesting. I think that's a lot of fun. And we're going to get started with very short tales of horror. So stay tuned. Let's get started with the very short tales of horror. This first one is brought to you by Bat Out of Hell 821. This new old house. We bought an old house, my boyfriend and I. He's in charge of the new construction, converting the kitchen into a master bathroom, for instance, while I'm on wallpaper removal duty. The previous owner papered every wall, including the ceiling. Removing it is brutal, but oddly satisfying. The best feeling is getting a long peel, similar to like your skin when you have a peeling from a sunburn. I don't know about you, but it kind of makes the game of peeling on the hunt for the longest piece before it rips. Under a corner section of paper in every room is a person's name and a date. Curiosity got the best of me. One night when I Googled one of the names and discovered that the person was actually a missing person. The missing date matched the date under the wallpaper. The next day, I made a list of all the names and dates. Sure enough, each name was for a missing person with dates to match. We notified the police, who naturally sent out a crime scenes team. I overheard one text say, "Yup, it's human." "Human? What's human?" "Ma'am, where is the material you removed from the walls already? This isn't wallpaper you are removing." The next one is brought to you by Dark Alligator. We woke up to a huge insect-like creature looming over his bed and screamed his lungs out. He hastily left the room and he stayed up all night, shaking and wondering if it had all been a dream. The next morning, there was a tap on the door. Gathering his courage, he opened it to see Gentle Place plate filled with fried breakfast on the floor, then retreated to a safe distance. Bewildered, he accepted the gift. The creatures chittered excitedly. This happened every day for weeks. At first, he was worried they were fattening him up, but after a particular greasy breakfast left him clutching his chest from heartburn, they were replaced with fresh fruit, as well as cooking. They poured hot, steamy baths for him, even tucked him into bed at night. It was bizarre. One night, he woke to gunshots and screaming. He raced downstairs to find a decapitated burglar being devoured by the insects. He was sickened, but disposed of the remains the best he could. He knew they had to just protect him. One morning, the creatures wouldn't let him leave his room. He laid down confused, but trusting as they had his back. Whenever or whatever their motives, they weren't going to hurt him. Hours later, a burning pain spreads throughout his body. It felt like his stomach was filled with razor wire. The insects chittered as he spasmed and moaned. It was only when he felt a terrible squirm feeling beneath his skin that he realized the insects hadn't been protecting them. They had been protecting their young. That whole story right there is just creepy. They could make a movie out of that. Next one, I'm probably going to butcher this name. Zenry Hao. Zenryhao. Seeing red, the first day of school. Everyone loves the first day of school, right? New year, new classes, new friends. It's a day full of potential and hope. Before all the dreary depressions of reality show up to ruin all the fun, I like the first day of school for a different reason, though. You see, I have sort of a power. When I look at people, I can sense an aura around them, a color outline based on how long that person is going to live. Most everyone I meet around my age is surrounded by a solid green hue, which means they have plenty of time left. A fair amount of them might have that yellowish-orange tinge to their auras, which tends to mean that they're going to die in a tragic way like a car crash. Anything that takes people before their time. As they say, the real fun is when auras venture into the red end of the spectrum. Though every now and again, I'll see someone who's basically a walking stoplight. Those are the ones who get murdered or kill themselves. In such a rush to see them and know their time is numbered. With that in mind, I always get to class very early so I can start scouting out my classmates' fates. The first kid who walked in was basically radiating red. I chuckled to myself. Too damn bad, bro. But as people kept walking in, they all had the same intense glow. I finally caught a glimpse of my rosy tint reflection in the window, but I was too stunned to move. Our professor stepped in and locked the door. His aura was a sickening shade of green. This one actually kind of gives me chills the way it's told. It seems so simple, but really creepy at the same time. This next one is by Louie. It's L-L-O-I-U. It's called, "They Got the Definition Wrong." This one will make you think. I like this one. It has been said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I understand the settlement behind the saying, but it's wrong. I enter a building on a bet. I was strapped for cash and didn't buy into the old legends of the hotel to begin with. So, $50 was more than enough to get me to do it. It was simple. Just reach the top floor, the 45th floor. Shine my flashlight from a window. The hotel was old and broken, including the elevator, so that meant hiking up the stairs. So up the stairs I went. As I reached each platform, I noted the old brass plaques displaying on the floor doors. 15, 16, 17, 18. I felt a little tired as I crept higher, but so far, no ghosts, no cannibals, no demons. Piece of cake. I can't tell you how happy I was when I was entering that stretch of numbers. I joyfully counted them out loud up to each platform. 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 44. I stopped and looked back down the stairs. I must have miscounted. So I continued up, 44, one more flight, 44, and then down 10 flights, 44, 15 flights, 44, and so on. It's been for as long as I can remember. So really, insanity isn't doing something repeatedly and expecting different results. It's knowing the result will never ever change, that each door leads to the same staircase. to the same number. It's realizing you no longer fall asleep. It's not knowing whether you have been running for days or weeks or years. It's when the sobbing slowly turns into laughter. I really like that take because that is an interesting way to describe insanity. And it kind of creeps you out because there's people out there that probably deal with this issue. Next one is called My Daughter Learned to Count. This is from Real Science 87. My daughter woke me up around 11:50 last night. My wife and I had picked her up from her friend Sally's birthday, brought her home, and put her to bed. My wife went into the bedroom to read while I fell asleep, watching the Braves game. "Daddy?" she whispers, tugging on my shirt sleeve. "Guess how old I am next month?" "I don't know, beauty." I said as I slipped my glass. "How old?" she smiled and held up four fingers. "It is 7:30 now. My wife and I have been up with her for the last 8 hours. She still refuses to tell us where she got them." That one takes the innocence of a creepy child. I'm sorry. Takes the innocence of a child and makes it creepy. That just sounded rude the way I said that. That's funny. All right. Next one is called Timekeeper by Gridster2. He had been given the watch on his 10th birthday. It was an ordinarily gray, plastic-rich watch in every respect except for the fact that it was counting down. "That's all the time you have left in the world, son. Use it wisely." And indeed he did. As the watch ticked away, the boy, now a man, lived life to the fullest. He climbed mountains, swam oceans. He talked, he laughed, he lived, he loved. The man was never afraid, for he knew exactly how much time he had left. Eventually, the watch begins its final countdown. The old man stood looking over everything he had done, everything he had built. 5. He shook hands with his old business partner, the man who had long been his friend and confidant. 4. His dog came and licked his hand, earning a pat on the head for companionship. 3. He hugged his son, knowing that he had been a good father. 2. He kissed his wife on the forehead for one last time. 1. The old man smiled and closed his eyes. Nothing happened. The watch beeped once and turned off. The man stood standing there very much alive. You would think at that moment he would have been overjoyed. Instead, for the first time in his life, the man was scared. Next one is called There's No Reason to Be Afraid by Whoever Fights Monsters. All lowercase, all one word. When my sister Betsy and I were kids, our family lived for a while at this charming old farmhouse. We loved exploring its dusty corners and climbing the apple tree in the backyard. But our favorite thing was the ghost. We called her Mother because she seemed so kind and so nurturing. Some mornings, Betsy and I would wake up, and on each other's nightstands, we'd find a cup that had been there the night before. Mother just left them out, worried that we might get thirsty in the middle of the night. She just wanted to take care of us. Among the house's original furnishings was an antique wooden chair, which we kept against the back wall of the living room. Whenever we were preoccupied watching TV or playing a game, Mother would inch the chair forward across the room towards us. Sometimes she'd manage to move it all the way to the center of the room. We always felt sad putting it back against the wall. Mother just wanted to be near us. Years later, long after we moved out, I found an old newspaper article about the farmhouse's original occupant, a widow. She murdered her two children by giving them each cup of poisoned milk before bed. Then she hung herself. The article included a picture of the farmhouse's living room with the woman's body hanging from the beam. Beneath her, knocking over, was an old wooden chair placed exactly in the center of the room. That would be creepy to read years after you move. I really like... Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I hit my vape. I really like this one. The Perfect Plan by Hunt Frog. On Monday, I came up with the perfect plan. No one even knew we were friends. On Tuesday, he stole a gun from his dad. On Wednesday, we decided to make our move during the following day's prep rally. On Thursday, while the entire school was in the gym, we waited just outside the doors. I was to use the gun on whoever walked out first. Then he would take the gun, go in the gym, and start blasting. I walked up to Mr. Quinn, the guidance counselor, and shot him in the face 3 times. He fell back into the gym, dead. The shots were deafening. Were screams heard in the auditorium? No one could see us. I handed him the gun and whispered, "Your turn." He ran into the gym and he started firing. I followed a moment after. He didn't hit anyone. Kids were scrambling and hiding. It was mayhem. I ran up behind him and tackled him. He struggled. I wrenched the gun out of his hands, turned it to him, and killed him. I closed his mouth forever. On Friday, I was anointed a hero. It was indeed the perfect plan. Warrior of God by KMA POK. The KMA are capitalized POK. If God exists, why is there so much evil in the world? It's a common question, but it is misplaced. All things must have a balance. Light and dark, good and evil, sound and silence. Without one, the other one cannot exist. So if that's true, then God does nothing to fight evil. That might be your follow-up question. Of course he fights evil, relentlessly. I am D'Artagnan, one of his most holy and righteous angels. I roamed the earth, disposing of evil wherever I found it. I kill the monsters you don't ever want to know about. I crush them completely, so you can sleep at night. You humans have no idea how many of you live because of the work I do. But what about Stalin, Hitler, Ted Bundy, Jack the Ripper? Well, those are some of the minor ones I had to let live for balance. The ones I destroy are too terrible and vile to survive. What's funny is, while I would wager you never have heard of the name D'Artagnan in any religious text, I bet you have heard of me. Americans, for example, have their own name for me. Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. That one's creepy. The Accident by Menboy with two N's, so it's M-I-N-N-B-O-Y. It was 1 a.m. and Guy Halverson sat in a dark living room. He hadn't moved for 1 hour. The accident earlier that evening kept playing over and over in his head. The light turned red, but he was in a hurry and he accelerated. An orange blur came from his right side, and in a split second there was a violent jolt, then a bicyclist rolled across his hood and fell out of sight into the pavement. Horns blared angrily, and he panicked, stepping on the gas and screeching away from the chaos into darkness. Shaken and keeping an eye in his rearview mirror until he got home. "Why did you run, you idiot?" He'd never committed a crime before this and punished himself by imagining years in jail. His career gone, his family gone, his future gone. Why not just go to the police now? You can afford a lawyer. Then someone tapped on his front door and his world suddenly crumbled away beneath him. They found me. There was nothing he could do but answer to it. Running would only make things worse. His body trembling, he got up, went to the door, and opened it. A police officer stood under his porch light. "Mr. Halverson?" asked the grim officer. He let out a defeated sigh. "Yes, let me. I'm terribly sorry, but I'm afraid I have some bad news. Your son's bike was struck and hit by a hit-and-run driver this evening. He died at the scene. I'm very sorry for your loss." Next Time You'll Know Better by I Post at Midnight. Have you ever walked into a room and found a vampire? No, not the sexy kind, but a foul creature with bony limbs and ashen skin. The kind that snarls as you enter like a beast about to pounce. The kind that roots you to spot its sunken, hypnotic eyes, rendering you unable to flee as you watch the hideous thing uncoil from the shadows. His heart started racing through your legs, refused to. Have you ever felt time slow as the creature crosses the room in the darkness of a blink? Have you shuddered with fear when it places one claw hand atop your head and the other one under your chin so it can tilt you, exposing your neck? Have you ever squirmed as its rough, dry tongue slides down your cheek, over your jaw, to your throat, in a slithering search as if it's seeking for your artery? Have you ever felt its hot breath release in a hiss against your skin when it probes your pulse, the flow that leads to your brain? Has its tongue rested there, throbbing slightly as if savoring the moment? Have you then experienced a sinking, sucking blackness into you, your discover that not all vampires feed on blood, but some on memories? Well, have you? Maybe not, but let me rephrase the question. Have you ever walked into a room and suddenly forgot why you came in? I'm never going to think of anything else ever again. That just completely messed me up, 100%. This next one's called Hands. It's by that Minboy again, M-I-N-N-B-O-Y. The doctor pulled the stethoscope ear tips out of his ears and hung the device around his neck. "Mr. Weatherby, all of the tests come back negative, and my explanation shows there's nothing abnormal." Adam knew that was coming next. "I'm not crazy, doctor." "I'm sorry, but there is no physical reason why you occasionally lose control of your hands. A psychologist can help." "I don't need therapy. I need answers. They seem to have a life of their own. I can't hold a job. I'm under investigation for an assault. I almost killed my neighbor. This can't go on. I'll try anything at this point." After 2 weeks on a new medication, Adam saw no progress and grew increasingly depressed. He was convinced that despite what the doctor said, it was not a psychological problem. That night, a frustrated and angry Adam sat in a chair and drank bourbon. Drunk and hopeless, he stumbled into his garage and started the table saw, then slowly lowered his wrist toward the screaming blade. Detective Armstrong entered the garage where several uniformed officers stood over the blood-soaked body. "So, what we got here?" he asked, taking in the blood-splattered scene. "This one is a weird one, Detective." "How so?" "Take a look at the body. He apparently chopped his hands off with the table saw and bled to death." Armstrong knelt down. "And?" "Well, we can't find his hands anywhere." Stay tuned. The Happiest Day of My Life by Recludus. That's R-E-C-L-U-D-U-S. I watched as my soon-to-be father-in-law held his daughter's hand. As we walked down the aisle, tears streaming from his face, as the wedding march that played in the background reminded him that in a few minutes he would be watching me hold his daughter's hand and slip a ring on it. He walked up to the altar and took hold of her hand, grinning from ear to ear. It was the happiest day of my life. My bride's father got down on his knees and started begging. Please, I did what you asked. Just please, give me my daughter back. I glared at him. Shut up and stop running the moment. If you sit down and enjoy the ceremony, maybe I'll tell you where I've hidden the rest of her body. That's creepy. I like that one. That one, I think about it, should be in like a music video or something. Nice heavy rock band. Next one's called Hidden by that KMA Pock again. Where are you? I screamed, panicked. I run through the abandoned farm. I can't find her. Not in the old house. Not in the barn. I run into an empty field, heart racing. As I scan the area, I run into a mound of dirt and trip, sprawling to the ground. Getting up, it hits me. Abandoned farm. I tripped over a freshly tilled earth. Crouching down, I started frantically clawing my hands, scooping handfuls of dirt and hitting something of hard. Wood, are you there? I cried, pressing my ear against the wood. I hear muffled cries. I start digging again, but realize it is taking too long. Looking around, I see a garden shed. I sprint to it, ripping the door wide open. I see a shovel, still caked with dirt. Probably the same one that bastard buried her in. I grabbed it. Running back, I started digging with purpose. Soon the wooden box was exposed and I tossed the shovel and ripped open the crate. She stares back at me, eyes wide, bound, gagged, but alive. A sign of relief. Thank God. I'll reach into my bag. I pull out a rag and chloroform. I crouch down, place it over her face. She struggles and faints. I toss her over my shoulder. Oh, hell, my brother says as I walk back to the truck with a smirk. You found her. Yeah, you almost had me, though. I laugh. All right, my turn. Where did you put her? I gesture to the creek area. Somewhere over there. Drowning is an issue, though. Jerk, he says, running off. I smile, watching him go. I love adult hide-and-seek. This one's called My Favorite Support Group. It's by that I post at midnight again. Look, I've been the first to admit I'm a complete bastard. I'm also lazy. I'm only here to find the idiot, because there's almost always an idiot in these support groups. Is pretty typical. We connected online, decided on a quiet place, and now we're all sitting cross-legged in a circle. Real kumbaya crap. Jerome takes the lead, pouring everyone a cup of tea as he starts talking. I'm Jerome. You can drink your tea, but only after you explain why you are here. I'll start. Jerome tells us he's never been loved. I can see why. The guy's ugly as sin. He sips his tea while the mousy chick speaks next. Mew, she says. My parents. Short and sweet. No blubbery. Gotta admire Mew. She's probably not the idiot. Next to talk are a legless veteran, a broken businessman, a needle track junkie, and a diseased old crow. Then it's my turn. I'm an ass. Everyone hates me. I take a loud, annoying slurp of oolong as the fat kid with the black eye goes next. Tell his boring fat kid sob story. Afterwards, we're all sitting quietly when Jerome kneels over. Then Miu's eyes roll to the back of her head and she slumps forward. Only the fat kid reacts.
What's happening?
He whines.
I thought this was a suicide support group.
Found the idiot. It is, I say, spitting out a mouthful of tea. They support it. No one wants to die alone, kid.
Oh, how ghost white he turns, looking into his cup. I love it. These suicide meetups are Satanist dreams.
And I never had to lift a finger. Told you from the beginning, I'm a lazy bastard. The eyes are watching me from that Reclodos again. I bought a new house in a small town of Winthrop. The house was cheap, but the most important part was I needed to get away from the city. A few months ago, I had a run-in with a stalker. While I had managed to get him arrested, I couldn't shake the feelings of his eyes, just constantly watching me. I felt like there were eyes everywhere, at home, on the streets, so I decided to move into the country to where less people are, just for the peace of mind. The house itself was big and somewhat old, but otherwise very welcoming. The agent who introduced it to me had been required to mention that a serial killer had lived there in the past, which was why the house was so cheap. However, he and later, my next door neighbor, Sarah, both told me to pay the thought no mind. Four other owners had lived in the house since, and all of them were very happy with it. I loved this house. Its interior furnishings were beautiful and very comfortable. The people of Winthrop were friendly, often bringing over freshly baked goods or inviting me to their dinners and get-togethers. Where the key to making sure everyone who lived in Winthrop loved it there. Yet after a week, I stopped loving it. The feeling of someone watching returned, worse than before. I tried to ignore it, but soon I started losing sleep. Giant bags grew underneath my eyes, and I began yawning, almost as much as I was breathing. Sarah was kind enough to let me stay in her house for a few nights. It was during this time that I heard the legend of Forrest Carter, the serial killer who had lived in my house. While no one knows of his exact kill count, Carter, also known as the Winthrop Peacock, was a man with extremely severe case of narcissism. They spelled it wrong. Legends say that he couldn't fall asleep if he didn't feel like he was being watched. He was finally arrested for putting up a scarecrow to watch him during the night. Only it wasn't a scarecrow. Carter had murdered a 17-year-old girl just so her corpse could stare at him. The story gave me shivers. And after I went home, I felt like there were hundreds of pairs of eyes watching me no matter how I turned. Today, however, was the first day that I acted out. I was cooking breakfast when I felt the eyes. Instinctively, out of fear, I threw my kitchen knife, which lodged itself into the wall. As I pulled it out, I found myself staring at a pair of eyes, pickled in formaldehyde. I've been watching the police peel away the drywall of my house for hours now. So far, they have found 142 pair of eyes in little jars. The scariest thing is, each and every one of them was staring at me. The Twist at the End by AIL267, that is AIL267. Cradling my 4-year-old daughter in my arms, all I could do was listen to the screaming outside the house got louder and louder.
interspersed with the sounds of violence and horrible, horrible wet thuds and the unmistakable echo of muscle and sinew resisting the force that was slowly tearing them apart. It started just 3 days ago. Something happened out there in the world. And before we got any news of it, of what was going on, seeming half the world was gone. Police and military were unable to stop it, providing such a short frame of resistance, it's hard to know whether it was real or just a fluke. There was no centralized target, no way to use our most powerful weapons, not without incinerating ourselves in the process. They poured forth across the world from wherever it was that it started. I hear banging on the door downstairs and the screaming of people being slaughtered. Unable to mount a proper resistance against such a force, it doesn't take long before the pounding gives way to splintering and the sounds of shattering wood. They're in the house. No more than a moment or two passes before the door of the bedroom starts shuddering. The things piled against it are holding for now. But I know realistically that they're going to manage to come through. I keep rocking my little girl, humming a lullaby in her ear to calm her as she cries. The pounding grows in force and volume. The frame starting to crack. I put my little girl on my lap, her back to my chest, and stroke her hair with both hands, from the top of her scalp down to across her ears. Just as I've done ever since she was a baby. Just the way she loves it. The effect is instantaneous. Her desperate crying calms to a series of sobs and hiccups. Her small body shuddered against mine in fear. I keep humming to her, soothing her hair, acting for all the world as if nothing is out of place, not a single thing amiss. Agonizingly slowly, in a reverse cadence of sound of splintering wood, she calms down. I can feel it when she stops tensing as I keep stroking her down the sides of her head. A final hiccup of a sob, and she falls quiet, her body relaxed. She doesn't even have time to realize what's happening as I twist her neck with a violent jerk, accompanied by a dry snap of sound. She's dead before she can even slump down into my lap. The door is given away. The furniture is pushed back. I may be torn limb from limb while I scream, but at least my baby angel's safe from harm. Crying isn't going to help. By Honest Rage. I point the gun at the sick bastard who killed my wife. He sobbed as he feared for what was to come. I pull the trigger. If only he spoke and tried to reason with me, then maybe he could have lived. But that was obviously not going to happen. After all, he was just born a few minutes ago. That one is dark. I am sorry if that one creeps you out. That one is very dark. Return of the Messiah by Hunt Frog. In the year 2026, the Messiah comes back to Earth. She performed miracles and cured the sick. There was no doubt as to her authenticity. She appears to all nations at once, all believed, and all worship her. Sometime later, after this period of our history known as the Age of Peace, she dropped a bombshell on us. She warned us that heaven is almost full. Nobody's gone to hell during this age. There were a fixed amount of spots left. Paradise would be closed to all who die after the gates, or would be lost after whoever dies when the pearly gates close. That was when mass suicides began, taking your own life. She had told us it was not a sin if you die a pious man. The race was on. She looked on and was pleased. She returned to her home, to her throne of fire and flames, and greeted all with a nod of her wicked horns. So, I Lost My Phone by Lynx. That's L-Y-N-X-X. Last night, a friend rushed me out of the house to catch an opening act at a local bar music night. After a few drinks, I realized my phone wasn't in my pocket. I checked the table we were sitting at, the bar, the bathrooms. Still no luck. I used my friend's phone to call mine. After two rings, someone answers, gave me a low, raspy giggle, and hung up. They didn't answer again. I eventually gave up as I lost cause and headed home. I found my phone laying on my nightstand right where I left it. This next one's called Nap in the Car by Boo. That is B space O space O. Mommy always leaves me and Daddy at home on Saturday nights. And me and Daddy always go get ice cream in the car after dinner. I have to sit in the back seat, though, until I'm a big boy. I go in the kitchen to see what Daddy is cooking for dinner after my Barney movie's over. But he's not in there this time. I saw a note on the counter that said Mommy and Uncle James were going somewhere. I'm not sure. I don't read really good. I go to find Daddy. He's in the garage. I shut the door behind me like I'm supposed to. Daddy is in the car and he has already got the car turned on. He must not be eating dinner tonight, only ice cream. I get in the back seat behind Daddy since I am not a big boy yet. Daddy doesn't say anything when I say hello to him. Maybe he can't hear me over the loud car. I think I'll take a nap on the way to get ice cream. I'm feeling kind of tired. Why They Don't Tell You About the Dead by Crimsa. That is C-R-I-M-S-A-I. I don't want to sound mean, but the dead are pretty clueless. I've always seen them. When I was younger, everyone thought I was just talking to imaginary friends. After a couple of years, when I overheard my parents talk about calling a psychiatrist or a psychologist, I realized that I was talking to, see, ghost. Don't tend to realize they're dead. And they don't look like they do in the movies. They look just like us. I'm pretty smart for a 13-year-old, so I started noticing certain patterns to tell them apart from the living. They could be a bit distant from living people, or you'd see them try to talk to people who wouldn't even notice them. Some of them could tell I was different, that I noticed them. Like this guy I saw after school yesterday. I'm a big boy now. See, I don't need my parents to pick me up for home is only a short walk away. He was standing away from the other parents, didn't talk to them, just stared at me. That's how I knew that he was one of the ghosts. I went over and told him I knew what he was and asked how I could help him. I don't remember much after that. I think because of what happened this morning. Downstairs, my parents were crying. I tried talking to them, but they just ignored me. They must have died last night somehow, or sometimes the new ghosts wouldn't talk to me. Some police officers and reporters just arrived. They won't talk to me either. Just my parents. It's weird. I've never seen so many ghosts together before. Why won't anyone talk to me? A message from your personal demons. Hello, my dear. You do not know who I am, but I know you. I am one of the three demons that are assigned to you at birth. You see, some people in this world are destined for greatness, destined to live happy, fulfilling lives. You, I am afraid, are not one of those people, and it is our job to make sure of that. Who are we? Oh yes, of course, how rude of me. Allow me to introduce us. Shame is my younger brother, the demon on your left shoulder. Shame tells you that you're a freak, that those thoughts of you have are not normal, that you will never fit in. Shame whispers into your ear when your mother found you playing with yourself as a child. Shame is the one who makes you hate yourself. Fear sits on your right shoulder. He's my older brother, as old as life itself. Fear fills every dark corner with monsters, turns with every stranger on the dark street into a murderer. Fear stops you from telling your crush how you feel. He tells you it is better not to try than let people see you fail. Fear makes you build your own prison. But who am I then? I am the worst of your demons. But you see me as a friend. You turn to me when you have nothing else, because I live in your heart. I am the one who forces you to endure, the one who prolongs your torment. Sincerely, Hope. Sleep well. So some of those are the short, horrible, creepy tales on Reddit. Now, I kind of want to go over an experience with you guys that I went through not too long ago. I'll explain where everything came up and I will tell you the story. So when I was younger, I used to try to interpret dreams. And when I did that, that was because I needed to control one of my dreams that I had over and over again. I eventually got over it. And the way I interpreted it was there was something I needed to fix about myself. I'm not sure exactly what I did, but I finally did complete the dream afterwards. So we go into a lot of that. I had a dream the other night that I was playing music with a couple of friends on the sidewalk. I don't know exactly where we were at, but wherever we were in front of a building playing music for like tips or something. And I don't even know really why I was there, but except for that, that was the only thing that was in mind. Midway through the dream, whatever building we were in, there was a big group of people that were coming out. And these were kind of people that, and I'm not trying to classify, but they were kind of shadier looking people. And with them all getting out at the same time, it was almost like a support group type thing. But this was not like, I'm not saying that people look a certain way when they go to the meetings or whatever, but this wasn't like a basic AA meeting. This was like hard criminals. Like I said, they look shady or maybe even homeless. And we're playing our music and a couple of them, you know, throw a quarter in our little box that we had, or one person lays down a dollar, but they all pretty much walk past us. And one of the guys look at me and he's like, "You make that 10,000 yet?" And me being in customer service, I treated him just like I treat my customers at work. And I just start laughing. I'm like, "Nah, man, we ain't got that 1,000 yet." He's like, but I need that 10,000. I was like, "So do we. We're trying to make it big." And he throws his arm around me and he's like, "Hey, brother," I said, "we got to make that money." I said, "I hear you." So he starts to walk away. After he gets about, I'd say realistically 15 feet away or so, he turns around, looks at me and like kind of does this come over here gesture. I'm thinking maybe this dude needs a lighter. Maybe he's going to ask me if he can bum a cigarette. I don't know. Instantly, he puts his one arm over my shoulders again and says the same thing about the $10,000. And I do a little chuckle. I'm like, "Boy, you know, I ain't got no money. I ain't got that $10,000. His whole face demeanor drops and he stares at me and he goes, "I need my $10,000. After he says that, I go to open my mouth to say something, and without skipping a beat, he sticks what reminds me of a pin, but the whole thing is metal. He sticks it through my throat, hitting my jugular on the way. I grab my throat in a panic, trying to stop the blood as I fall to the ground. Of course, since a big group's coming out, I'm already not being seen, but then a couple of his buddies are acting like they're walking, but just pretty much standing in front of me in the grass. As I go to yell, my throat fills up with blood so fast I can't even make a sound. I start choking, and I feel this as I sleep. Then, the biggest creepy feel I felt was my blood pressure drop. It felt as if my heart gave out, like it wasn't beating no more. But it was very relaxing. It was an interesting dream. So I lay there, go to scream. I can't. I'm coughing. There's blood stuck in my throat. And at this point, I'm just like, well, after I've done cut my jugular and I'm bleeding out and I feel my blood pressure go, this is it. I'm dead. And the weird part is when everything went dark for me dying, I didn't feel scared. I didn't feel freaked out. I felt at peace. And as I woke up from this dream, it wasn't like as much as a nightmare, as much as it was, I felt at ease. So this creeped me out, obviously, and I want to tell people about it. So I come downstairs and I talk to my mom, talk to my wife, and I'm discussing the dream to them. As I discuss the dream to them, mom looks at me and goes, well, if someone dies in a dream, that means someone's going to be born. And if someone is born in a dream, that means someone's going to die. And I felt really creeped out, and I was like, well, I don't really think I know anyone that is, you know, having a baby, or, I mean, will this mean that they're going to find out they're having a baby or have the baby? She goes, with you finishing the dream of dying, it should be someone having the baby, but it could go either way. Someone could show up pregnant. It's like, all right, cool. And then it all hit all three of us at the same time. My neighbor was pregnant with a baby. And sure enough, that day, she delivered a healthy baby boy. No complications. And it's really weird because it's just one of those old tales like, oh, well, this is what it means when it comes to your dream. But I'm not close to those neighbors in the sense of I don't get up in their business. Like, I heard she was pregnant probably, you know, after I seen her and a couple months before or whatever. But that was not on my thought. Like, hasn't been on my thought for a while. And then when we all brought it up, I was like, holy cow. So that's what made that very weird. Also, another reason why I try to do a lot of dream interpretation is two reasons. One, I want to try to remember my dreams. But two, I want to be able to manipulate them when they're going the way that I don't want them to go. So I had this reoccurring dream. This was way back in like high school or something. And I'm sitting there and I'm with a group of friends. It is like, I think a total of seven of us. And it's very, I don't know, I guess you would call it Friday the 13th. We're going to a cabin and we're staying at a friend's cabin. And of course, we're all making jokes about how this is how horror films start, blah, blah, blah. I had this dream, to my recollection, at least 11 times. But we're all having fun on the drive to the cabin. We get there and we hear a noise. Now we're all in the downstairs. We're doing the basic college, high school things. You know, we're playing beer pong and we're flirting with the girls and who wants to play Truth or Dare later or blah, 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 you know, strip poker, whatever. And we hear a crank upstairs. And of course, we're all like, you know, it's probably just the pressure of outside or whatever. But then we hear walking footsteps. And we all huddle up together to the upstairs door and we're going to go open it. And me being the leader in this group of friends, I tell them, open the door. I'm going to stop whoever it is. When they open the door, I see a very Pirates of the Caribbean ghost sort of thing. And I'm talking about when, like, they look kind of like greenish in tint of skin, that greenish aqua color, but smoked out, obviously. Silhouette of the person, and very detailed chiseled looks of what seems to be someone stuck underneath the ocean, you know, where barnacles might have attached or just fungus and bacteria have grown on the skin. And I'd wake up. Like I said, I had this dream at least 11 times that I can recall, but it happened periodically throughout high school. And so the way I interpreted that dream is I'm out with friends, but I need to change something about myself to fix whatever issue it is, whether it's the way I treat my friends, whether it's the way I treat myself in a group. I'm not really for sure, but what I do know is the last time I do remember having that dream, I successfully finished the dream by going to punch the guy in the face that's standing at the stairs. My hand goes through his head, he disappears, and I wake up. And I don't know exactly what it was that I fixed about myself or what I was worried about fixing about myself, but whatever it was, I finally got to finish that dream. So that's another reason why I like these types of stories and stuff, is because it really makes you think all the way from like that one guy describing insanity to just the creep factor. A lot of it I really enjoy. If you really enjoy my podcast, please tell your friends and family to listen to me. Don't forget to hit that support. If you are into watching Twitch streams, I'm on there as well. Everything has the / Jesse Rich at the end. And like always, I love you all. Later.